Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:08 p.m. That is Pacific. No, it isn't. It is Central Time. And today is August 11th. Well, when we look at gold, we've had a reasonable bounce in here today, up $23. So certainly confirming at least near-term support in the $1,700 level and also in the region of the lows from back in March. Something that we've seen on repeated occasions in gold have been these sharp downward drafts towards the end or towards the nadir of a corrective phase, and this might be another example of that. So we're looking likely that the lows put in March were the low, and that there was the potential that this was a recovery, particularly because it had broken the downtrend. And everything was looking fine until the middle of June, and then we had this bigger downdraft and resistance in the region of the trend mean, and then the big decline for 2 days last week. Friday and Monday of this week. So that was obviously debilitating to sentiment and certainly put some pressure on weak holders, and we had a significant liquidation. And it would be difficult enough if this were a one-off, but this happens sufficiently regularly in precious metals for I think veteran investors to expect this kind of activity. That's why I had bids under the market, because precious metals are volatile. They seldom do what you want them to do, and when they do it in their own time. And the reality is that we just have to be aware of the big macro picture. Because when we start to think about the minutia, about what money flow is doing from one day to the next, then it's easy to get bogged down. And instead, we just need to take a step back and to think about what was it, in fact, that created the peak back in 2011. Well, it was the rise of the Tea Party, and they were a group of people that were very clear on sound budgets. And they wanted to contain or sound money and wanted to contain profligate spending. And they succeeded. So that started to withdraw liquidity from the market and reduce the supply of dollars. And the dollar rallied pretty impressively. Now, it wasn't exactly the same reason in terms of the catalyst, but it was certainly part of the reason why we started to see. And it is, I think, just before I go into that, it's worth highlighting that the dollar did bottom in 2011, and it recovered pretty substantially over the course of the next between 6 and 9 years. So with the dollar index at the upper side of the range, and a large number of Fed Reserve officials talking about the need to taper assistance, and the Congressional Budget Office talking about needing to borrow $2 trillion less in 2020 than they did in 2021. Well, I think people took fright at all of that, because what it was clearly signaling was that there's going to be a dearth of dollars, and that dollars are going to start getting withdrawn from the system, which should support the value, and then would act as a headwind for gold and other assets, particularly commodities and emerging markets. Well, over the course of the last 2 days, we've had reasonably large events. The first is that the U.S. infrastructure bill has passed the Senate, and it did so with bipartisan support. It's extremely likely that that will now go into law, and it's a significant boost in terms of liquidity hitting the market. Then there is the additional $3.5 trillion budget, which the Democrats are attempting to push through. Well, that pretty much puts a hole in any real belief that the supply of bonds is going to decrease in a meaningful manner next year. Instead, it's likely that they're going to have to massively increase supply, and that the entire calendar of bond issuance will have to get rejigged if this bill goes through. So it obviously then calls into question whether the Fed, despite the continued talk of tapering, will in fact be able to go ahead with that because the primary rationale for tapering was that there would be fewer bonds issued, and then there obviously they didn't want to crowd out the private market, so they wouldn't be buying as many. Well, that potential seems to be receding into the background. And then, of course, they're worried about inflation, and the CPI figures that came out today were somewhat weaker than they were last month, and the dollar is at the upper side of its range. But let's then take another big step backwards and just ask ourselves bigger questions. Is there any party anywhere that is now talking about the need for sound money, the need to balance budgets? Because even in Germany, we have significant money that's being tailored and allocated for rebuilding following the floods just in the last couple of months. There's a new government going to be formed within the next 6 or 7 weeks. And then, of course, there's going to be a lot of additional spending in terms of coming out of the pandemic. So, even Germany is at a point where there is a need for fiscal spending. Europe generally has been the region of the world which has been most disciplined in terms of fiscal austerity, and that is now ending as well. Japan is also looking towards an attempt, at least, to devalue the currency. And they're certainly not allowing the currency to appreciate here. So we have the dollar at least steady here in the region of the trend mean and testing the downward bias over the last 6 years. If there is no government in the world that is willing to tolerate the strength in their currency that would be implied by trying to balance their budgets and spend within their means, well, then the purchasing power of currencies is going to deteriorate. And that should be music to the ears of gold investors. So gold is at least at a near-term low. There is the potential that it's a medium-term low, and that if it is anything akin to the kinds of sharp pullbacks that we had in 2004, 6, and 8, well then the chances are that we could be at a new all-time high for gold within the year. Think it's a good time to at least give some consideration to the fact that medium-term corrections for gold were completed in the Septembers of odd years. So they were completed we had new highs posted in 2001, 3, 7, 9, and 11. And breakouts occurred in Septembers of each of those years. And we also had a breakout in 2010. So that was a change to the consistency, and what it also suggested was that the pace of the advance was clearly picking up. So then we should at least pay attention to the fact that we're in August of an odd-numbered year now. The price has been consolidating for a year, and we've just bounced from the lower side of the range, and that when gold goes, it really goes. And it goes in a surprising manner because it always surprises on the upside because the periods between the big pops on the upside are maddeningly difficult to navigate, and everyone's resolve is tested, and the entire bull hypothesis is questioned. And we've had all of that occurring in the course of this last year. So, if all of that is going to fit into the same kind of environment that we had in the decade up from 2001 to 11, then the lows put in this week will hold. And that would then lend some credence to the view that we'll be at a new all-time high within the year, and potentially quite a bit sooner than that if gold starts to gain traction. But we're certainly at an interesting environment right now, and then the gold mining sector is right at the lower side of the range that's been forming now for more than a year, and the upper side of the underlying base formation that persisted between 2013 and 2020. So, a first step above the base is when there's a big debate about whether we're in a secular or a cyclical bull market. And provided that breakout holds and support continues to be found in the region of the upper side of the base, well, then it helps to illustrate that demand is coming through at levels that were not credible during the base formation, but that for whatever reason, people are now paying more for the asset. So, gold miners are a cheap sector, particularly with gold prices in the region of about $1,750. And if gold rallies from here, then it will start to see the gold mining sector giving some high beta characteristics, particularly in view of their cash position and potential to raise dividends. And silver also pulled back in a violent manner this week, and it is also beginning to steady here. And I think a lot of people will be a lot happier when silver can sustain a move above the $25 area and push back above that 200-day moving average. And platinum prices were also firm in here today and pushed back up into the $1,000 handle. So this is at least near-term evidence of support being found in the region of the upper side of the base formation. And often we see that past resistance, and there is ample evidence of resistance around the $1,000 area for platinum, then becomes future support, which is what we're beginning to see right now. So it's really we're at a critical juncture for the precious metals overall. If the consistency of these trends is going to remain, and it's going to be a reasonably easy sector to analyze, then we should see prices hold these levels. Then it's also, I think, rather interesting what's happening in the cryptocurrencies right now. Because in the last 48 hours, we've seen that the biggest hack in the history of the sector was pulled off, and they got away with $600 million. And today they're starting to give the money back, and they're saying that it was a white hat operation, and that they simply were looking to highlight some of the vulnerabilities in the network. And what I find perhaps more interesting than all of that is that on the news that the money had been stolen, it didn't move the market, and the price has rebounded in here today. So that's quite different, because on previous occasions when there have been big thefts of crypto, it has moved the market and it has contributed to at least pauses in uptrends. And we haven't even seen that in here over the last 2 days. Then I think this chart is rather interesting, because one thing that the pandemic has done is shield us, or at least shield our perception of what's going on in the wider economy, because so many people lost their jobs in one go that it's created a dislocation, and people don't have anything to compare the current events with. So there's a feeling of deep uncertainty. But I thought that this was a particularly interesting graphic, because Bitcoin prices peaked around March, April, and then had a really quite meaningful decline. And during that time, then demand for mortgages started to trend higher, and then also demand for entry-level jobs. Well, that would suggest that there's been a lot of demand from young people. They made money during the pandemic from the cryptocurrency markets, and as prices started to come down, they cashed out. So some of the more wealthy individuals started looking at perhaps buying a house, and the others decided that perhaps they should go to work. Well, during the bull market of the 1990s, then a large number of people felt that they could leave gainful employment and become day traders. And there were day trading operations cropping up left and right, and it was deemed to be money for old rope because all you had to do was buy IPOs. And on this occasion, perhaps the pandemic has hidden the number of people who are making good living from trading cryptocurrency. So there are legions of people that are involved in this sector, and there are all manner of ventures cropping up that even pay you for playing games. So there's certainly a lot of activity going on in this sector. And I can also see like that just on the micro scale, everything from the major to the macro, where we see on the for wealthy inder wealthier individuals that art prices are surging higher, and buying enough art to fit into a house is becoming progressively more expensive. And then on the micro scale, I can see that my daughter is making well, more money than she ever made in pocket money from selling art online. And what she's been able to gain is starting off with a couple of dollars 6 months ago, selling them now for anything from 15 to 50, or sometimes even $100 an item. And the art hasn't, I mean, the art hasn't gotten that much better in the last year. But certainly the prices that she's been able to command have. So this is all a function of the quantity of money that is floating around, and the intention to put as much of it to work in the market, any market, as possible, in order to protect against the potential for money to be eroded through inflation. And obviously, there's the big argument about whether this inflation is going to be transitory or not. But if inflation lasts for years at a time, then the reality is that it's hardly transitory. And most people would think that prices should go up and prices should come straight back down. And that would be the definition of transitory. What's happening with the lumber price, for example, is a good example of that. So prices went way up and then they came way down. And we're at a new reaction low in here today and are looking rather oversold now as the price is now back where it was in October of last year and has pretty much unwound all of the advance. Now, when we look at what's going on the S&P 500, well, I opened ahead short because I was feeling progressively more cautious that this period of inert trading was going to translate into a somewhat deeper reaction, and that a deeper reaction would be required in order to compel central banks to stop talking about tapering. But the US government might be doing the job for us, and by saying that they're going to spend a ton of money. So the stock market is still quite firm, and it is eking out new highs on a daily basis. Of course, it's only one downward dynamic away from looking pretty ropey, but so far it remains really quite well bid. And then we can also think about what's happening in Europe, because there are big indices that are breaking out of extraordinarily lengthy bases. And everything that we've ever learned from reading charts is that big breakouts from big bases contribute to big bull markets. So the end of austerity in Europe is a big deal, and it's likely to contribute to significant price appreciation. And at a minimum, it can be viewed as catch-up potential, and at best, it might be viewed as the return of interest in value. And certainly, this transition towards value is gaining some traction because while the S&P was in positive territory, the Nasdaq was in negative territory. And the announcement yesterday of an effective treatment that's in phase two trials for treating COVID, then that perhaps is robbing some of the initiative from the vaccine sector. So what and I didn't effectively link those two stories together when I was writing about this yesterday. But definitely, this is a big downward dynamic for Moderna, and it marks a peak of at least near-term significance. So it would suggest that this acceleration, which was in action really until yesterday, is now over for a while, and that it could be in for a multi-month period of consolidation overall. Then, what I find also rather interesting is the continued steady action that we see in the oil market. We're right in the region of the peaks from the last few years, and oil prices continue to steady here. And this continues to look like an uptrend overall and a reasonably consistent pause in the region of the peak from back in 2018. So I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt provided these lows are holding. And it would suggest that with the significant cuts to exploration budgets at the majors, and with the shale sector having already hedged out their production, then they're not going to be investing in additional new supply until some of those hedges run off and they can capture more of the upside. And that would suggest that we're still in a reasonably limited supply environment. Of course, limited supply environments are particularly helping to support the lithium market because the intention to create a lot more renewable energy and then a lot more rechargeable batteries, well then that's going to create a lot more demand for lithium. So that ETF has also accelerated higher, but we haven't had any kind of downward dynamic yet to suggest that this trend is in fact over. What is interesting too is that in the hydrogen sector, we've had an extremely deep pullback. This is a much less well-developed market than solar or wind. So we've had spectacular runs on the upside, equally spectacular declines. And now the big question is, how many of these companies are going to be able to muster the wherewithal to continue to bounce from here? Obviously, some will be better placed than others. Nikola, for example, with its hydrogen fuel cell or proposal for a hydrogen fuel cell truck, is right back on its lows, and it's the kind of company that could potentially eventually go bust. Then Ceres Power has been licensing its technology to Weichai. So Weichai has still been trending higher, and it's been able to hold a sequence of higher reaction lows over the course of the last 6 years. But this is still a virgin territory trend overall. And the number of hydrogen fuel cell vehicles on the road is quite low. And these are, I think, sectors that are probably going to represent high beta plays on renewable energy for the time being, at least until market caps start to approach that of some of the larger other renewable energy companies. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.